And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use from Free Radio Santa Cruz. Stay tuned. I suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy because there might be something you want to write down, some information that might be pertinent. You might want to respond to something. You might want to go to a web page, check out something, send something. You know, you might want to support a group that you hear about. Well, you aren't going to remember it later if you don't write it down. Let's start off with Friends of the River. Their Salmon Run for Rivers is looking for volunteers. Salmon Run for Rivers is going to happen on October 25th, an endurance run from San Francisco to Sacramento to save the salmon and the rivers they depend on. The runners will parallel the path salmon take as they swim in from the ocean through the San Francisco Bay Delta and up the rivers that flow into it to reach their spawning grounds. They're running in solidarity with the salmon to celebrate their incredible journey and build support for restoring the rivers they depend on. Looking for 12 to 15 supporters to run various distances from Sausalito to Sacramento, and 5 to 6 supporters to kayak in the bay. If you're interested in participating, please contact Friends of the River via email at info@friendsoftheriver.org. That's info@friendsoftheriver.org, and you can visit their webpage with the same name. The Animal Liberation Front has released 30 foxes from an Iowa fur farm in this story received anonymously by Biteback and found in the Earth First Newswire. The Animal Liberation Front is taking responsibility for the release of 30 foxes from a fur farm in Anamosa, Iowa. On the late evening of Thursday, September 25th, 2014, 10 years after the raid of the University of Iowa, the ALF has returned to East Central Iowa. The farm targeted was Robert Roman, 23778 Fairfield Road in Anamosa, Iowa, the zip code 52205. The majority of fencing on the farm's east and west sides was stripped away. The fencing on the north was enveloped in heavy brush and unlikely to be a point of passage, while the south abutted a shed retrofitted with living quarters where the lights were on and a car was outside, indicating that the raiders were not alone. The advantage of releasing foxes over mink is that foxes are silent. As a result, the proximity of fox pens to a farmer's house is irrelevant, as we have shown. Future visitors to Fox Farm should be aware that foxes are extremely timid. Unlike mink, they should be encouraged to exit their cages as a vital ingredient of any fox rescue. A point worth repeating, this entire action required $40 in gas, $20 in tools, and only a few hours to execute. The past 2 years has seen a tenfold increase in the known number of farm addresses related to fox farming. The animal liberation movement is now in an unprecedented position to wipe out fox farming in the United States. Fox farms represent the softest targets for these reasons. Fox farms are small, with the animal numbers usually in the dozens. Foxes are silent, as mentioned above, and foxes are rarely a primary income source for farmers who can be easily persuaded to discontinue fox farming. And there are under 150 fox farms known to exist. Foxes are genetically wild. They have never been domesticated. There is a large and thriving wild fox population in Iowa. We encourage the media to maintain their professional integrity by seeking comment from actual wildlife biologists about the survivability of farmed raised fox, not fur farmers or their trade groups. To be clear, our mission extends beyond fur. We aim to eradicate all animal exploitation industries, meat, dairy, egg, animal research, and beyond. We encourage the public to adopt a vegan diet first, raid farms second. A final message to activists: the ALF doesn't need your passive support. We need your active participation. The Animal Liberation Front, or ALF, is dedicated to accused mink rescuers currently under federal indictment in the United States and activists making history in Eastern Europe. And ALF raids a mink farm in Italy. Again, an anonymous post from Biteback as found on the Earth First Newswire. On August 23rd, we opened the cages for the mink farm on Via Tossati in Scorze, Italy. There were three structures at the farm for keeping of animals. One was empty, so we were busy in the other two, where hundreds of mink were locked in cages. We removed all identification tags, making it impossible to identify or classify any animal that was recaptured. We damaged several cages and destroyed dozens of meters of fence at the back of the farm to allow the mink to escape into fields between thick crops and streams. Soon farms will start killing thousands of mink for the production of fur. For these animals that will be skinned, there is no other possibility than to open the cages. Animal liberation is not empty words, but a reality where there is oppression. We dedicate this liberation action to the anarchist prisoners Gianluca and Adriano, signed ALF. And Klabona Keepers and Wildlife Defense League confront and evict a trophy hunter after a tense standoff in Canada. This from the Wildlife Defense League, otherwise known as the WDL, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Here is the Operation Great Bear campaign update. WDL crew recently experienced a heated confrontation with trophy hunters in the sacred headwaters. Below is a description of the event from crew on the ground, along with photos, which you'll not see on the radio, peacefully blocking the vehicle by sitting in front of it. Two trucks, one with a camper and the other with two ATVs, attempted to pass through the blockade at 1 p.m. Wildlife Defense League crew handed the trophy hunters the eviction notice, which was immediately tossed aside. In order to stop them from continuing along the road, two crew members stood in front of the truck. However, the trophy hunters then began to drive the truck into the WDL crew members, who refused to move. The situation was becoming more dangerous as the truck continued to push us back, said WDL member Tommy Knowles. I was yelling over and over again for him to stop and that he was going to hurt us, but he refused to acknowledge us and kept driving. In the past, activists have been seriously injured or even killed, blocking vehicles from moving, and I couldn't help but think that something could go terribly wrong. The truck finally came to a halt when WDL crew sat in front of the vehicle and left the driver with no choice but to run over them or stop. The trophy hunter then threatened to either physically force WDL members out of the way or drive over them. Fortunately, the situation was successfully defused, and the Klabona keepers also spoke with the hunters and left them with no choice but to leave the land. These trophy hunters are now banned from entering Klapan. And here's the Buffalo Field update from the Buffalo Field campaign. It is amazing to say the Buffalo Field campaign is gearing up for our 18th season in the field, standing with the buffalo. So much has changed since those early years, yet we still have a long way to go to truly protect wild migratory buffalo. This year could prove to be another difficult one, as Yellowstone National Park has already announced their intention to slaughter 900 buffalo. This plan is being legally challenged by the Buffalo Field Campaign and the Friends of Animals Wildlife Law Program, who together submitted an emergency rulemaking petition with the National Park Service and the U.S. Forest Service to stop this slaughter before it has a chance to begin. Sadly, such large-scale slaughter operations would happen during and after hundreds more wild buffalo are gunned down by hunters along Yellowstone's north and west boundaries. Some tribal treaty hunting could begin as soon as buffalo start migrating into Montana, and the Montana state hunt will be underway starting November 15th. The combined state and treaty hunting of wild buffalo that migrate into Montana is an excruciatingly long season, which can begin as early as September and last until the end of March, just weeks before buffalo calving season begins. One very exciting and positive development is Montana Governor Steve Bullock's directive to the Montana Department of Livestock issued last May, which states that the agency may not haze wild buffalo off private property without the landowner's permission. This directive was used just a few times late last spring, and this season more landowners in both the Hebgen and Gardner basins will be able to benefit themselves and wild buffalo with this directive. Buffalo Field Campaign is working hard to thwart all efforts to harm and kill America's last wild migratory buffalo in the field, in the community, in the policy arena, and in the courts. You can help to bolster these efforts by visiting the Take Action page on our website and contacting various decision makers who have the power to change the status quo. You can also help to keep us on the front lines, ensuring that the actions against wild buffalo never go unchallenged or without witness. Be sure to volunteer. Buffalo Field Campaign is seeking buffalo warriors for the approaching field season. Buffalo Field Campaign has seasonal openings for field volunteers. We have opportunities for every season, but are in great need of folks during our field season, which runs from mid-November through May, and is when wild bison are migrating into Montana. Any buffalo within Montana's borders is in danger of being shot on sight, hazed, or captured and shipped to the slaughterhouse. All volunteers are provided room, board, gear, and training. We cater to most any dietary need and respect vegan and vegetarian diets, but they also eat plenty of meat. We are located in a warm log cabin in beautiful Hebgen Lake, just a few miles outside of West Yellowstone, Montana. Please check our website for details, and we'll see you on the front lines. That website is www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, and be sure and check out their page of stuff that they need. And send it to the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at area code 406-646-0070, and you can find all of this information and more at their website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And the feds have acquired a 5,800-acre wilderness near Santa Cruz in this story by Curtis Alexander. The federal government took possession this year of a notable 5,800-acre plot of wilderness and ranch land north of Santa Cruz known as Coast Dairies, part of an ongoing effort to protect the coastal forests and salmon spawning streams of the Santa Cruz Mountains. The acquisition, which came in the form of a giant donation from the nonprofit Trust for Public Land, is the second most valuable property ever gifted to the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, valued at over $40 million. The BLM plans to open the property to the public for hiking, biking, and horse riding, but only after the agency has time to address safety issues on the land, such as covering old mining pits. "We're excited to get this property," said George Hill, an associate field manager out of the BLM's Hollister office. "It's been a long haul, but we're all stuck with it." The property, once a working ranch off of Highway 1, was optioned for the development of luxury estates in the 1990s, which prompted the San Francisco-based Save the Redwoods League to negotiate a purchase. The property was ultimately transferred to the control of the Trust for Public Land, which shaved off a sliver along the water to be run as a state park, and another slice for farming. With other public agencies lacking money to manage the land, the BLM agreed to take over the bulk of the property. Will Rogers, president and chief executive for the Trust for Public Land, said his organization's goal of preserving the plot is not yet done. Rogers is among a group of environmentalists petitioning the federal government to recognize the property as a national monument. The designation wouldn't necessarily offer additional protections to the parcel, since the Trust for Public Land has ensured that commercial logging and mining won't take place there, but it could add prestige. "It gives that really special status to a property," Rogers said. "I think people who know the property think it deserves that kind of status. A decision to grant monument status rests with the President of the United States, who in 2012 bestowed the special designation on Fort Ord, just south of Santa Cruz near Monterey. Historic ruling halts mining and returns 50,000 hectares to the indigenous people of Colombia." In this story by Sasha of the Earth First Newswire. In a first-of-its-kind ruling, a Colombian tribunal halted the operations of 11 mining companies in the western part of the country last week, restoring the land to members of the internally displaced Embara Catio tribe. The ruling has restored 50,000 hectares, about 100,000 acres, in the municipality of Bogado, in the department of El Choco, to more than 7,000 Embara Catio. Choco is among the 10 top most important hotspots in the world in terms of its concentration of both biodiversity and climate change mitigating capacity. The key corporations affected are Anglo Gold Ashanti, as well as Exploraciones Choco Colombia, Gongora, and El Molino. In 2009, Embarra halted U.S. corporation Muriel Mining Corporation for failing to give prior and informed consent. As one representative declared, if Muriel Mining does not end its exploitation of our sacred lands, we will go up on the mountain and remove the machines ourselves. In the years that followed, Embarra community members and leaders were harassed and assassinated by thugs related to the mining companies and the state. According to the Colombian National Indigenous Organization, the Embarra have been among the most heavily affected communities in the ongoing armed conflict against indigenous peoples in Colombia. Since President Santos declared the week before the ruling passed that the peace process with FARC would soon be complete, the recent decision to restore Embarra lands is being viewed as part of a restorative process with guerrilla groups that has been touted as Santos' ongoing efforts to end the decades-long civil war. Drug violence has indeed pushed the Chocó over the last decade, threatening the survival of numerous indigenous peoples, but much of the violence is directed against indigenous peoples and the Afro-Colombians in order to expropriate lands for mining and agri-fuels production. It's important to recognize that the Embarra were not simply removed at a given time or even over a period of decades. They have remained in El Chocó fighting against mining companies for many years. Now that 11 mining companies have been removed from their lands, and exiled community members are being allowed to return, the Embarra Catillo tribe have effectively won their battle. It makes no sense to claim this is a kind of easy victory of the Santos regime. If anything, this is a victory for everyone. The fact that the recent verdict has been tied to the peace process perhaps reveals the extent to which the drug war has served as propaganda cover for the ultimate reason underlying the disposition of indigenous peoples, the seizure of lands for resource extraction. Hopefully, however, this verdict will mark a milestone in a restorative process in Colombia and throughout the Western Hemisphere as unceded lands are returned and settler colonialism reversed. Trespass grows and wildlife on public lands, in this story by Rob DePerna of the Environmental Protection Information Center. We have seen it all before. Boom and bust resource production and extraction in Northern California has been the norm since the beginning of European settlement. From the timber boom to the gold rush, we have now entered the era of the so-called green rush, the high time of marijuana production. Marijuana growing in Northern California has traditionally been a cottage industry scale economy. However, the recent surge in industrial scale production has also come an increased awareness of the potential significant environmental harms to forests, fish, and wildlife from large scale egregious grows both on private and public lands. EPIC has been at the forefront of advocacy and education efforts aimed at exposing the potentially significant environmental damage that can result from industrial scale and particularly trespass marijuana production in Northern California's public lands. Of particular concern are egregious trespass grows on our national forests, where paramount concern must be given to the protection of forests, fish, and wildlife resources. Earlier this month, and I believe they mean September, EPIC filed a Freedom of Information Act request with Region 5 of the U.S. Forest Service aimed at acquiring documents detailing the effects of trespass marijuana growing on public lands and their impacts on forests, fish, and wildlife. EPIC has requested information regarding the number and size of trespass grows, the status of the Forest Service's monitoring and enforcement efforts, and the amount and type of toxic chemicals found at individual grow sites. EPIC has also requested information pertaining to how the existence of these trespass grows has hampered the ability of the Forest Service to conduct essential survey and monitoring activities from endangered and threatened wildlife species, most notably the northern spotted owl. A particular concern regarding trespass marijuana production on public lands is the use of anticoagulant rodenticides that can have a deadly effect not only on the rodents targeted for eradication, but also on other wildlife species that prey on these rodents. Anticoagulant rodenticides can persist in forest ecosystems and can infect the food chain that supports a myriad of threatened and endangered wildlife species, such as owls, fishers, and martens. EPIC's Freedom of Information Act request will help to evaluate the monitoring and enforcement efforts of the Forest Service provide a window into the amount of illegal and egregious trespass marijuana agriculture on public lands, and serve to inform the public about the nature and extent of this problem and its associated effects on threatened and endangered wildlife species and public lands resources in general. EPIC is dedicated to combating these egregious and illegal marijuana cultivation activities on public lands as a significant threat to watersheds, forests, fisheries, and wildlife. EPIC is also dedicated to shedding the light of day on these activities in order to inform and engage the public and decision makers. Trespass marijuana agriculture on our public lands poses an ominous threat to our wild California and to the essential and irreplaceable resources that our public lands support. EPIC will continue to advocate for small-scale and sustainable marijuana agriculture that honors the importance of our public lands as well as our water, forest, fish, and wildlife. And if you want more information about this or any of EPIC's programs, go to www.calwild.org. That's CALWILD.org. Cal Wild. And a grizzly bear has been involved in a fatal attack on a hunter, and the bear will stay in K country with their cub. In this story by Colette Derwuritz of the Calgary Herald, as found in the Earth First Newswire, a grizzly bear that killed a sheep hunter in Kananaskis country, Alberta, Canada, will be left in the area with her cub after it was ruled to be a defensive attack. Over the weekend, Calgarian Rick Cross was walking alone in Pickle Jar Creek Trail when he was attacked and killed by the bear. "It was definitely a defensive attack, not a predatory one," said Glenn Naylor, District Conservation Officer with Kananaskis Country. "That was the main decision-making factor, and we have to look at all of the evidence and all possible scenarios first," he says. "The evidence clearly points to the fact that he was out of the blue and countered this situation, and the chain of events that happened pretty quickly. Cross was hunting for bighorn sheep, but didn't return home that night as expected. His family reported him missing to the police on Sunday morning, and a search began. Officers found his backpack and rifle on Sunday, but have to call off the search as darkness fell and bears were still in the area. They found his remains not far from his belongings a day later." Naylor said the evidence shows that the bear responded defensively, both because of its cub and a freshly killed deer carcass in the area. "It attacked Mr. Cross, and the result was tragic. He was killed," he said. "After he was no longer a threat, the bear left him alone. He wasn't touched again." That led biologists in both Alberta Parks and Alberta Environment and Sustainable Resource Department to rule it a defensive attack. "That was the conclusion that was arrived at by everyone," he said, noting other options would have been capture and relocate the bear or and cub or destroy them. Naylor said provincial officials had met with the Cross family about their decision to leave it alone. "They were appreciative of all our efforts," he said. "They had no problem with the result." Kim Titchener, program director at Bow Valley Wild Smart, said it's the decision she expected. "They have a great reputation for doing what's right for wildlife and what's right for public safety," she said. "That bear isn't a threat. She was doing what bears do." The Pickle Jar area, however, will remain closed until the bear and her cub are finally finished feeding on the deer. And the Interior Department says it can't afford to properly plan for wind energy. A coalition of conservation organizations has requested the U.S. Department of Interior to develop a national programmatic wind environmental impact statement to identify appropriate areas for wind energy development as well as areas where new projects should be avoided to conserve wildlife and sensitive habitats. The request came in an April 23, 2014 letter to Secretary of Interior Sally Jewell. In response, American Bird Conservancy received a July 31st letter from Rachel Jacobson, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Fish and Wildlife and Parks, stating, quote, "The department remains committed to using landscape-level planning processes to help identify appropriate places for all types of energy development. We currently do not have the resources to undertake a nationwide process you have suggested, ... "We sincerely hope the Interior Department makes it a priority to find the resources," said Michael Hutchins, Ph.D., ABC's Bird Smart Wind Campaign Coordinator. "With the explosive growth in the wind energy on public lands projected over the next 20 years, Now is the time advanced planning would make the most difference to minimize wildlife impacts and address public concerns about the large number of birds killed each year by wind turbines. The response letter notes that there were a number of processes in development, including the Desert Renewable Energy Conservation Plan in California and the Bald and Golden Eagle permitting rule under NEPA, that will provide further guidance for renewable energy development. Though not mentioned in the letter, the Greater Sage-Grouse Planning Initiative is also providing clear development standards for 37 million acres of priority grouse habitat. Other efforts mentioned in the letter, such as the Voluntary Wind Energy Guidelines and Eagle Conservation Plan Guidance, which were not developed under NEPA, have thus far proven ineffective at steering wind energy developments away from high-risk areas to eagles and other birds. When it comes to wind energy, siting is everything. Much of this conflict over bird mortality could be averted by a national wind energy EIS, which would determine where wind energy should be developed and where it should not, Hutchins said. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this program, please tune in tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. That is Friday afternoon on Free Radio Santa Cruz. www.freakradio.org. You can also hear a rebroadcast on 90.3 KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, Idaho, at 9:30 p.m. on Monday nights. Or tune in to Radio Free Edmonton, YEG Radio at WordPress.com. That's YEG Radio at WordPress.com, 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon and 10 a.m. on Sunday, and that is Mountain Time. Or you could go to radio4all.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, where you can listen online or download a podcast of this broadcast. The Earth First Update is produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz and is a production of Earth First Radio. We want to thank you for listening. We'd also like to suggest that you support radio4all.net. They are a place where radio shows such as this, produced by independent and pirate radio stations, are archived for later broadcast at other stations. Radio4all.net is in dire need of funds to support their archive activities and to keep their equipment up and running. So go to radio4all.net and click on the banner at the top to support Radio for All. Free Radio Santa Cruz is a community-supported pirate radio station operating independently without FCC license since 1995. We'd also like your support. And thank you for listening to the Earth First Update.